Today I'm going to tell you two stories, and the first is about Siddhartha, otherwise known as the Buddha, who abandoned a life of luxury and of power so that he could search for spiritual meaning. After nearly starving to death as a wandering ascetic, Siddhartha realizes that he is no closer to solving the mystery than he was when he started. So he decides to sit under the Bodhi tree, a wide-branched tree, and meditate, refusing to move until he finds understanding. I could tell you the story myself in words, but there's a wonderful PBS documentary called Siddhartha that does it just so poetically. So we're going to watch a little clip of that, which you can find on YouTube or on pbs.org if you'd like to watch the rest of it. Before we start, I want to note that it's always wonderful to have children in the service at any time, but if you have little people in the service right now, there's a bit of this clip that could be a little scary. So just warning, it's probably PG, we'll say.
It was springtime. The moon was full. Before the sun would rise, Siddhartha's long search would be over.
He sat down under a Bodhi tree in the shelter of the natural world in all of its beauty and fullness. And he said, "I will not move from this place until I have solved my problem.
Let my skin and sinews and bones dry up, together with all the flesh and blood of my body," he said. "I welcome it. But I will not move from this spot until I have attained the supreme and final wisdom." All at once, Mara, Lord of Desire, rose to challenge him. With an army of demons, he attacked. Siddhartha did not move, and their weapons turned into flowers.
Mara is the ruler of this realm of desire, this world that we all live in. And what he's afraid Siddhartha is going to do when he attains enlightenment and becomes the Buddha is conquer that world. That is, he's going to do away with desire. He's going to wreck the whole game.
Mara did not give up. He sent his three daughters to seduce him. Siddhartha remained still.
When he faces Mara, he faces himself and his own destructive capacity. But he's not the warrior trying to do battle with those qualities. He's discovered his own capacity for equanimity. He has become like the top of the great Himalayan mountains. You know, the weather is passing over him, storms are raging around him, and he sits like the top of the mountain, impassive, not in a trance state, you know, totally aware of everything. So he frustrates Mara.
Siddhartha resisted every temptation Mara could devise. The Lord of Desire had one final test. He demanded to know who would testify that Siddhartha was worthy of attaining ultimate wisdom, and his demon army rose up to support him. Siddhartha said nothing. He reached down and touched the ground.
So Siddhartha reaches down and touches the ground, and the earth shakes. It vibrates. The earth resonates with understanding that Siddhartha is ready for enlightenment. And so Mara is defeated and goes away, and the Buddha reaches enlightenment. So we see that the Buddha faces down Mara, the evil tempter, who is trying to pull him from his quest. Mara is our green and multi-limbed monster. He's fascinating, creative, and tireless in his desire to distract the Buddha. Every month, our congregation considers a different theme, and this month, our theme is good and evil. Juicy. So Siddhartha facing down Mara, who represents evil temptation in the Buddhist tradition, this seems like the perfect pair to kick off our month with. But the thing is, Buddhists see Mara less as a six-legged green monster and more as the temptation that is inside all of us. Mara personifies unwholesomeness, unskillfulness, the death of the spiritual life. Mara is the doubt and the temptation that we all have inside of us. So maybe Mara and Siddhartha aren't the best model for talking about good and evil. Because we want a good guy and a bad guy, right? We want Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. We want Superman and Lex Luthor. Let's look to another faith for a clearer picture of good and evil. So about 500 years after Siddhartha faced Mara, Jesus of Nazareth, who some people would later call the Son of God, has just been baptized by John the Baptist, John the Baptizer, who is his cousin. Jesus is inspired by John and feels ready to face down the Roman Empire and bring faith to the masses. But first, he must spend a long time meditating alone in the desert. The New Testament of the Bible says that Jesus spent 40 days in the desert. But fun fact, 40 days is Bible speak for a long time. It could be 2 weeks, it could be 6 years, it's 40 days. We call it 40 days. So Jesus feels that God has called him to the desert to be alone and to reflect. But the devil comes to him to tempt him. First, Satan says, "Hey, so you are super hungry, right? You're doing this fasting thing? I bet your tummy is really growling. Why not turn these rocks into loaves of bread? Tasty, flaky, warm bakery bread. Yum. Go ahead, just do it." Now, Jesus is indeed very hungry, but he feels like, hey, I'm on this spiritual quest. Part of it is fasting. It's not about eating or not eating. It's about resisting desire. So he says no, because you've probably heard this before. He says man can't live on bread alone, but on the spiritual nourishment that comes from a relationship with the divine. Fine, the devil says, fine. So you think you're really exceptional, right? Think you have a saving message for all the people of the earth. But what if you're not so smart after all? What if you get laughed right out of town? But okay, if you're so special, why don't you prove it to yourself as well as to me? But you know, you need to know this. Go to that pinnacle, this highest point on the temple in town, and jump off of it and just see what happens. If you're really that special, the angels will catch you before you even stub your toe. Jesus thinks about this. What if it is all in his head? What if he is suffering needlessly, going town to town, trying to convert people who don't want to have anything to do with him? Maybe he needs a sign that he's doing the right thing. Maybe jumping off this pinnacle is the sign that will give him confidence to go forward. But before he starts climbing, Jesus realizes that this too is a trick. No, he isn't going to swan dive off the temple. He needs to find his courage. He needs to find a courage that doesn't rely on outward praise. He has to rely on his own sense of confidence, on rightness, and not look to other people for reinforcement. Satan has one last trick up his sleeve. You want to change the world, right? You want to overthrow the empire and end oppression and feed the hungry and start universal daycares or whatever, right? So there's an easy way to get all that going. You could rule over the entire world, all of it, right now, this second, if you do one thing. Bow down to me. Just bow down to me, and I will make you king of every kingdom. Well, it had to be tempting. I mean, I realize we're talking about Satan, but as king, Jesus could change all the corrupt, cruel systems and end oppression and do it in style, in a fur robe with a stroke of a pen. Not preaching to dusty masses, not hungry, alone in the desert. Jesus must have thought, well, I mean, the end is the same. But no, Jesus stays on his path. He refuses the devil's offer, and the devil leaves him. So good has conquered evil, right? Luke Skywalker beat Darth Vader. But it's not that simple, is it? Because the devil in this story is the same as Mara in the other story. Less many-legged green monster and more the temptations of our own psyche. Less a devil in a red suit and a tail and horns, and more our own desire to take the easy road, abandon the mission, and seek comfort through outward acclaim. Now, I'm going to be perfectly frank. There is some religious mythology that I can give or take. But when I see two stories, both foundational, incredibly important to their respective faiths, that are so similar, it makes me think. Even if these stories aren't factually true, it says something about us, about humanity, that we tell them again and again, over and over, for centuries. As we begin our month talking about good and evil, I want to begin by saying that good versus evil is never that simple. There's rarely a bad guy and a good guy. Just the human mind wrestling with its own insecurities. And the temptations we face and faced 2,500 years ago aren't that different than the ones we face today. As Siddhartha sits under the Bodhi tree, Mara first challenges him with an invading army of men shooting flocks of arrows pointed right at Siddhartha's heart. Terrifying. But Buddha faces that fear. He acknowledges it. I'm afraid. And he refuses to let the fear stop his quest. The arrows aren't real, of course. They're just his fears, and they turn into flowers when acknowledged. Jesus faces the same temptation. He is so hungry. He's in the desert. Who knows when food will be available again? Maybe he will starve to death before he accomplishes anything at all. Fear clouds his mind as he thinks of the warm comfort of bread that he could certainly buy in town. But Jesus resists, remembering his quest, and his fearful mind is defeated. So I wonder, what role does fear play in our ideas about good and evil? How does fear keep you from reaching your highest goals? Until fear is acknowledged, it absorbs too much of the mind for either Jesus or Siddhartha to continue. Next, the Buddha was tempted by the lusty daughters of Mara. Boy, they could sure shimmy. That's some animation there. Well, Jesus was tempted by the chance to rule all the kingdoms in the world. These are the same temptation, really. The desire to stop struggling, to stop working so hard, and have some fun. Why not pay a visit to the lusty maidens? Why not skip the hard work and play video games? Give up grassroots activism for a plush kingship? Where is Mara in your life? Where are you tempted to give up the difficulties that you need to get through to just have an easier life? What role does sloth, that big word, play in your spiritual journey? Finally, third temptation. Finally, the Buddha is challenged by Mara. Who says that you are so great? Who says that you are worthy of attaining ultimate wisdom? You are nobody. Jesus faces a similar challenge when the Satan of his mind challenges, "Are you sure you're up for this? If you're so powerful, throw yourself off that high point of the temple. Will the angels even bother to save you? You can't really believe you're so great, can you?" Self-doubt. The killer of creativity, of innovation, 1,000 wonderful ideas smashed on the shore of insecurity. How many times have you felt this most intimate incarnation of the devil? Jesus and the Buddha both faced it and could not continue toward spiritual enlightenment until they faced their inner enemy. This is the ugliest of the evils, the most effective of tyrants, the one we carry inside of us. How do you face your insecurities? This month, we're going to think a lot about good and evil. And let's think about Mara and about Satan and the harm we do ourselves when we face our desire for ease, when we fear, when we are afraid and anxious, and our deepest, darkest worry that we might not be good enough after all. Because far from two opposing poles, good and evil are a swirl of emotional states that our psyches wrestle with. It may be easier if there were a red-horned devil or a multi-limbed green Mara, because then we could challenge them and slay them. But when it comes to good and evil, it's all a swirl of gray in our own minds.